Welcome to RSN's Racing Pulse.
But Skirt the Wall is in front, and Skirt the Wall's all too good. Skirt the Wall's won by length and a half sec.
Lofty Strike over the top. What a good return. Lofty Strike has won it.
Fangirl rattling home, but Animo launches his autumn assault in great style. Artorias! Wow, Artorias bombed her and won the Canterbury Stakes right on the wire.
Philly Legato is driving at them and got up. The filly, the Kiwi, Legato has nailed attrition.
For the next 3 hours, the breaking racing news, the stories, opinion, the mail, and the people who make racing happen. Here's Michael Felgate.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Pulse on this Monday, the 20th of March. I hope you are well wherever you are listening. We have a very busy show coming your way after the All-Star Mile meeting at Moonee Valley on Saturday, the Golden Slipper meeting in Sydney, five Group 1s, and unfortunately another shocking fall. We'll talk more about the fall, the ramifications, the fallout, how T.O. Nugent is, and also the tweets from Ben Mellon. What does that mean moving forward? After 3 weeks in a row, there has been a serious fall on racing's biggest stage, Saturday feature racing in Melbourne. We'll speak to Andrew Jones, the CEO of Racing Victoria, this morning. We'll also have Matt Hyland joining us live because we are here at Woodlands Golf Club because it is the sixth annual Epsom Golf Day, and it is a day which raises funds for the National Jockeys Trust. So there will be big name jockeys out here later today as well, including Damien Oliver, Dean Yendel and others that we will speak to get their thoughts on what the current situation is, why we are having this spate of falls. But we want to focus on the All-Star Mile first up. We'll have a chat to Ben Hayes, and as I welcome in Matty Stewart and Mick Sharkey, gents, there is so much to get through over the next few hours, but the performance of Mr. Brightside on Saturday was another red-letter day for Ben and JD Hayes.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? He's the greatest gift they could have hoped for as they embarked on their solo career at Lindsay Park, and he delivered again. He's getting better. He didn't hit a plateau last spring. I think he's actually found a length or so and maybe back off to try and win his second Doncaster. So, enormous there. Hey, just on this venue, just beautiful golf course. There's something about golf courses in there. This has been what do you call those machines at Felgate hates? Those
wind blowers.
Wind blown to it to within an inch of its life. Yeah. Leaf blowers. Yeah. And
well, is there anything more ridiculous than having a leaf blower on a golf course with a million
trees? Well, tell those big leaf blower blokes how you feel about it.
It's not going to get rid of the leaves.
I was lying in bed this morning thinking, oh, gee, this is going to be a tough gig for the golfers today because it was swirling. But it's actually died. It's picked up a little bit since. But this place is looking really gorgeous. And
you were going to become a member here, weren't you?
Until I saw the costing. But this golf course, by the way, on White Street is basically in the site of very across the road from the old Epsom Racecourse. Yeah. So this represents a lot of racing history down this area of the world. So
we're going to talk a lot more about that and hear from a few special guests talking about the history of Epsom as well. But hey, boys, let's get straight into it. We've got Benny Hayes on the line, Mr. Brightside, another major win for Team Hayes.
Gentleman Roy went for home. 300 metres to go. A length and a half in front of Alligator Blood, who's getting into the clear. They were followed by Nugget. And to the outside, Mr. Brightside. Alligator Blood moves up and takes the lead, but Mr. Brightside's challenging. Mr. Brightside up to Alligator Blood. Cascadian late. Mr. Brightside in front. And Mr. Brightside has won the mile from Cascadian, the inevitable. Fourth Alligator Blood from Nugget. Next in the field.
It was a brilliant ride from Luke Curry, who made the hit and run dash back from Hong Kong to collect the $5 million payday. Ben Hayes was in Sydney watching their Golden Slipper winners while JD was spraying champagne at Moonee Valley after a rock, paper, scissors bout. Now, I think Ben may have actually won that. I'm sure he's not fazed that he wasn't at the course. But Ben, as I say good morning to you, where were you actually watching it at Rose Hill just before the slipper?
Well, it wasn't. It was actually just after the slipper. So it was about 15 minutes after the slipper, and we're just watching it in the mounting yard area. And that definitely perked me up a bit. Had disappointed with our slipper runners, and then 15 minutes later, Mr. Brightside put a big smile on our faces.
You realise now, Ben, after JD's antics, after the last couple of majors, that he's getting the party boy reputation there at Lindsay Park, whereas you're becoming more of the responsible straight shooter. Are you happy with the way that the cards are sort of playing out there?
Well, you know me well. I can party as well, but no, he's you're allowed to have fun when you win a group one. So, no, that's fine. I think, you know, you work really, really hard, and if you get those results, you got to enjoy them, because as a lot of people in racing know, they're hard to come by, and yeah, you got to really work hard for them. So, satisfying.
Benny, every shot of the race told the story of just how well Mr. Brightside was placed in the run. Best Bets has got a chopper. They're travelling well, Best Bets. The Best Bets chopper shot had you just, Luke Curry, just in that lovely spot just behind the speed. And then the normal footage of the race, it was when you were watching from the mounting out at Rose Hill, even after 400 or 500 metres, you must have thought, wow, it's not working out for the other two from their barriers, but look at Brightside.
Yeah, I was really happy. I was thinking, oh, we're going to need a bit of luck. Three back on the rail. And it was incredible when you watch the chopper shot. It was just an absolute 10 out of 10 ride by Luke. For him to get off the rail and get to that position so quickly, and for the horse to be able to do it and take that run, it was just a great effort. And he's just a super horse for our stable. He's really dragged us through the last 2 years. And for me, that was his best performance he's put down to date, and he beat some very good horses that have probably beat him a couple of times now. So I think he's probably levelled or even improved. So very happy.
Just on Luke Curry, and I know it's sort of hard to make an assessment off one ride like that, but it was an extraordinarily good ride. You know a lot about Hong Kong racing and the family's exposure over there. Jockeys seem to go over there, whether it's for a short stint, a long stint, whatever, and come back better. Well, why is that? Is it just the level of competition? Is there, you know, does the professionalism have to go up a notch when they're in Hong Kong? What's your view on how that jurisdiction can improve a rider?
Well, I think in Hong Kong, you've got to be invited there for one. So if you're going to Hong Kong, you are a well above average rider. So you're riding in a very high talent pool. It's very difficult over there because it's actually not as easy to get rides, and you have to be riding well to get rides there. And it's generally dominated by the top jockeys, Zach Purton, Hugh Bowman. They every race generally get the pick of the first three favourites. So you have to be a very good rider to riding 20, 30 to one shots every day to get the results. So yeah, I think it's, they only race twice a week, and I think you really got to focus and do your form and do everything right to be able to get those results. So while it's fantastic money over there for a jockey, it's also very, very competitive. So you have to be on your game.
The other aspect I wasn't sort of totally aware of was they don't have agents over there doing the rides for them. They've got to do the legwork, and as you say, doing the form then becomes so critical, and finding your speed maps, doing that homework yourself, it's a bit of a back-to-school sort of situation. But if you can get it right and get those race rides right, it all sort of parlays into a better finished product, a better professional.
Yeah, 100%. And it's only a small pool of horses there too. It's not like Australia, where you get them from all around the state. They can come and race in the big races. You generally really know the really good horses there, and they race each other all the time. So if you watch it and live racing in Hong Kong, you can almost know the form of all the horses before you even look at the field. So it's a very unique place, and it's good fun.
Benny, as the dust settles and you look at the next target, I know that the Sydney Doncaster, another crack at the Doncaster was the first thought, but Australian Cup is falling away by the day. Is there any thought of backing up next week in the Australian Cup?
We've spoken about it, but we do believe the Doncaster still gets a good weight in that. And then if he runs in a Doncaster, we can look at backing up into a Queen Elizabeth. That's something that we can look at. Obviously, no decisions are made, but that would probably be an interesting one for us to do, because then that will let us know if we target him towards a Cox Plate again or keep him to a mile next preparation. So that's probably the way we're leaning. I'm in the Hunter Valley at the moment, so Daddy and I need to have a good talk about it. So I have to stress there's no decisions been made, but that's probably the way we're thinking at the moment.
It might give you a clue.
Yeah, true. But I wouldn't mind trying to take on horses like Animo and just see, because they're the horses who've got to have to race in the Cox Plate.
Well, it was a great day at Moonee Valley. Give us the wash up in the slipper. What happened with your two up there? I know Arkansas Kid just didn't play out from that wide gate on a hot speed. And looking through the stewards' report, it was a total forgive for Little Rose.
Yeah, so Arkansas Kid, he surprised us. We weren't expecting the lead at all, and he flew the gates. And Jai made a decision, and he rolled forward and. Being, you know, a high pressure race on speed, probably did at both ends. I thought he ran perfectly fine, but probably wasn't ridden for him to run his best race. And then Little Bros, there's a little bit of interference, is just a bit new in the high pressure, it's back in the field, probably got shuffled back a bit further. And yeah, so he hit the line fine, but he's just never really in the race. So they're both just past mark, but they're probably both now going to go to the paddock, and we'll target the spring next year.
Ben, well done. Another major win on the weekend, and we'll wait to see where Mr. Brightside goes. There's no doubt he's the pin-up horse for both you and JD. Congratulations.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
We'll discuss the Beaten Brigade. Gee, there were some big runs in the All-Star Mile. A few disappointments as well after 9 o'clock, because we've got the boss of Racing Victoria, Andrew Jones, about to join us on the spate of recent falls. Just a word too on that, Craig Williams. You've got to think about Craig. He would have been riding Mr. Brightside, and he gave a lot of his time in the lead-up to Luke Curry and giving him instructions and insight how to ride him. So that falls cost Craig Williams there, and then Jamie Carr would have been on the Hong Kong Derby winner last night as well, which we'll talk more about later. We need to take a break. Andrew Jones up next. You're listening to the Monday edition of Racing Pulse and The Verdict.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict, live from Woodlands Golf Club. We are here for the 6th Annual Epsom Golf Day, raising money for the National Jockeys Trust, which is certainly apt considering the situation that Victorian racing has found itself in the past three feature Saturdays with horrific falls. We'll have an update from Matty Highland live here with us after 9 o'clock on Teo Nugent, who thankfully has headed home. It looked like it was going to be much worse than that. He still has very serious injuries, and our thoughts are with the Dream Thoroughbreds team, Amy and Ashiagi, who sadly lost Fluorescent Star in the incident on Saturday. And Maddie and Mick, we're about to be joined by Andrew Jones, and the situation has become dire with three major falls in three Saturdays, and leading jockey Ben Mellum has fueled the discussion with a series of tweets, the first one being, the elephant in the room needs to be addressed. Victorian workload on racing participants is far too high. Turnover and revenue is important, but not at the expense of people's lives. Fatigue kills. Hopefully, three near-death experiences in 3 weeks is enough. He goes on to say, race riding requires mental clarity for split-second decisions. Wednesday twilight, Thursday night, Friday night, track work, trials, 4 or 5 days a week. Racing 24/7, 365 days of the year. It's not sustainable. If meetings aren't scheduled, people simply can't go. And Matt, you've had subsequent correspondence with Ben and direct conversations with him as well.
Yeah, he's at the hospital today to visit his partner, Jamie Carr. Of course, his best mate, Ethan Brown. So it's hypersensitive to Ben Mellum. I just want to quickly read out, this is an extrapolation of what you just said, but it's interesting before we talk to Andrew Jones that this is a very well articulated text. I'm not saying there is a direct connection between fatigue and these falls. All I'm saying is we cannot keep piling on these night fixtures and expect nothing to give. Added with track work and trials every day, twilight meetings, and then followed by the likes of 10 race card on Saturday, adding dehydration and wasting. It's not uncommon for jockeys to work 16 to 18 hour days numerous times a week. There is a staff shortage because, well, let's face it, why would anyone want to work these hours? I think jockeys are filling that void. It's not as easy as saying don't ride. I get that. Race riding requires jockeys to make split-second decisions. The wrong decision in some instances can be fatal for themselves and others. Mental clarity is integral to the safety of everyone. It's common knowledge that people make mistakes when they are fatigued. I can just see it ending badly if things continue the way they are, whether that be on the road or on the track. So jockeys riding to the, you know, driving and riding. We're pretty much the only profession that has no off-season all year, basically runs 24/7, 365 days a year. It's absurd the amount of night meetings held in Victoria, and it's not sustainable. If there are no meetings scheduled, people can't ride. It's a time the industry as a whole started protecting some of these people that can't say no before it is too late. So that is a really...
So that's direct text message to you from Ben Mellum. So they were Ben Mellum's words. And as we introduce Andrew Jones, who's the CEO of Racing Victoria, I think this is a very complex issue. I don't think there is any simple answer. And it's an issue that's been around for a long time. It's just been thrust into the spotlight with the severe falls of the past 3 weeks. Andrew, good morning to you. I appreciate you giving us our time this morning. And as a new CEO in Racing Victoria, there's a lot to consider. What's your take out from what's occurred the past three Saturdays and then subsequent to that, the comments from Ben Mellum?
Good morning, gents. Look, first I just want to start by sending our well wishes to the jockey, CEO Jamie Craig and Ethan. Obviously, no one wants to see horses or jockeys injured, and it's a reminder that it's a sport with significant inherent risk. So we wish them every success in their recovery, and also want to acknowledge Amy and Ashardi, as you mentioned, trained Fluorescent Star. That was, you know, that was an ugly incident on Saturday, let's face it. In relation to Ben's comments, look, firstly, everyone's entitled to their view, and it's good that that our jockeys feel free to speak up on issues that affect the industry. And equally, it's important, I think, that we make decisions coolly in the cool light of day and based on the facts. So there's a few different things going on. Topic one is the falls. Topic two is fatigue risks and jockey workload. Topic three is night racing, and topic four is training times. And they are separate issues in essence. They're related somewhat, but they're best treated separately. So in relation to the falls, the stewards obviously are doing thorough investigations of what happened. And those investigations will be open until the stewards have had the chance to talk to the jockeys involved, who obviously have been focused on recovery. And once we've established the causes of those incidents, then we'll take action as appropriate, because obviously safe racing is top priority. The initial evidence is that two of the three were caused by the horse behind clipping the heels of the horse in front. That's, I guess, approximate cause, it looks like, but as I say, those investigations are open. The second issue is on fatigue and workload. Now, the historical position, which has been strongly promoted and supported by the Jockeys Association, is the jockeys are self-employed and can choose the time and place at which they ride to maximise their income and progress their careers. There have been discussions in the past between Racing Victoria and the Jockeys Association about whether it makes sense to impose a cap on working hours, but that position has not been supported by the Jockeys Association. If that changes, then obviously that discussion may change. However, it's very important to understand what the facts of the situation are. And the last time we looked at this, which was 2020-21, the data showed that the jockeys did moderate their workloads. So only, for example, 5% of jockeys rode on average in Victoria 4 or more days a week. And the top 50 most active riders competed an average of 3.7 days a week. So The jockeys are making their decisions to pick and choose when they ride, and as I say, that position's been supported by the Jockeys Association historically. There is a caveat to that, which is apprentices, who are obviously young and learning jockeys, are restricted. They can't ride a day and night meeting on the same day. They need to take 2 days off a fortnight. They can't ride more than 6 days in a row, and they need a 10-hour break between rides, which includes, for example, finishing in a night meeting and starting at track work the next morning. So we do limit the workload of the apprentices who are under Racing Victoria's care. Once they become senior jockeys, then they're self-employed and they can choose when and where to work. And obviously jockeys ride not just in Victoria, but they ride all over the world. So, they do exercise their freedom to ride where they see fit. I feel like I'm talking a lot, so feel free to jump in if you've got any questions.
Just in keeping with, you know, this being more than a single cause situation. A senior stakeholder administrator has just texted through other factors here, like racing schedule of 555 meetings and jump outs and track work has been the same for a decade. It's not the racing program, it's the external factors, stress, financial pressures, travel around Melbourne is terrible, events, interviews, arrival times and course, etc. External pressures are driving the problem. Night racing and Twilight's probably the single biggest difference now with 51's meetings a year. And that's what I just wanted to ask you about, was every jockey I talked to, and I had another chat to Mellum today where he said, I'm sitting in the rooms on a Saturday and I'm looking around at these gaunt, fatigued jockeys who have come off night meetings on Thursday, Friday and all sorts of things. Is Racing Victoria comfortable with its agenda for the next 10 years of, what the ambitions of Moonee Valley are in Caulfield and the push more heavily into night racing and Twilights, in light of, say, some of these comments from Mellum and others through social media after these falls? Is it a sort of a nervous ambition in a way, to with jockey safety in mind and fatigue, to pursue as much Twilight and night racing? I think the jockeys are collectively are opposed to so much night racing.
Well, first, as I said, you've got to separate the balls in recent years from the broader topic of the racing schedule. There's no evidence that they're related, so I understand.
Well, isn't fatigue caused by being up late and getting up early and so on? Is it hard to say they're not related?
Well, as I say, the falls, the stewards will conduct inquiries to work out what established, what caused the falls. Okay, so that's a separate issue. Second issue, the racing schedule, second issue is working out of jockeys. Should they be restricted? Well, if the Jockeys Association thinks that's a thing to do, which it never has, then we'll have that discussion. And there are restrictions on ours and other industries like trucking and so forth. But the historic position from jockeys has been that we don't want our working hours restricted. We want to be able to choose when and where we ride. And if we want days off, we'll take them, leave it to us, we're adults. And we've supported that position. Third question is the racing schedule and the broad topic of night racing. I've said to you guys previously that the core principle of scheduling any sport is to schedule it when fans are available and want to watch it. And people who watch racing, not people who work in racing, but people who watch racing, generally speaking, work during the day, relax at night and on weekends. And they're the people that pay the bills, either directly via attendance or more often via wagering. So to sustain the income levels and prosperity of the industry, you need to race when customers are prepared to watch and their viewing habits are skewed towards later in the day and later in the week. So the direct trade-off is between income for the participants in the industry and the time of day. And so my view, as a general principle, is that racing at the back end of the week at night or at twilight, particularly in the warmer months and months where there's more daylight, absolutely makes sense from a fan point of view. And then if that's causing issues for participants, whether they be jockeys, trainers or stable staff, then the right long-term answer is to start training in the morning later rather than finish racing earlier. And we're already trialling later training hours at Ballarat with some success, and hopefully that will extend elsewhere. And then
the
if
other
it's
element...
a specific issue with jockey fatigue, then we can talk about workload restrictions, but as I've said a few times, that hasn't been something that's been supported previously.
The other element which we'll discuss with Matt Hyland after nine or in the next few minutes is, are we racing too dangerously? Are we racing too tight? Is the carrot of huge prize money meaning jockeys are taking extreme risks? And on the other side, are there the penalties to deter such possible dangerous riding?
Yeah, look, those are questions for the stewards, and they'll look at the incidents in isolation and then see if there's a common theme. What I will say is that everybody wants safe racing, and everybody has an incentive to race safely, including the jockeys. So, no jockey wants to fall off a horse and injure themselves and the horse or the horse. And you don't win many races when you fall off the horse. So the incentives are very strong to race safely. Sometimes accidents happen. But as I say, we'll leave it to the stewards to work out the cause of these specific incidents.
And one last quick one just before we let you go. Matt Hyland raised yesterday in a .com article, and we'll ask him again, is the lack of or the amount of unpaid work which now is prevalent in the industry in regards to jump outs. In New South Wales, we have official trials. Jockeys get paid to ride them, and maybe there's a lack of staffing. So the race day riders are being used for 20-odd jump outs and so forth throughout the weeks in far-flung areas. Is there a move for Racing Victoria to try and close that loophole, whether the jump outs become official trials or some type of payment as well?
Yeah, the jump outs issue, again, that's a separate issue. That was discussed as part of the last EBA with the jockeys, and the trade-off was no jump out fees and increased riding fees. So if jockeys are paid and if our owners are charged for jump outs, then that money has to come from somewhere. Does it come from other riding fees? Does it come out of owners' pockets? It's always easy to ask other people to pay for something, but the money in reality has to come from somewhere. So that really is part of a broader EBA discussion when that's next up for negotiation. I don't think it links to the fatigue issue, and indeed, think about it logically. If you're paying for jump outs, you'll encourage jockeys to ride them more, not ride them less. So I don't think that argument makes a lot of sense in the context of the fatigue argument.
Andrew, appreciate your time this morning. Fingers crossed for the next few weeks we get safe racing, not just on Saturdays, but every day.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time.
We'll take a quick break for the news. We'll discuss what Andrew's just said. Matt Hyland, the boss of the Victorian Jockeys Association, will join us after this, live from Woodlands for the 6th Annual Epsom Golf Day.
Placing their opinion on the line, it's The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. It is Racing Pulse live from Woodlands Golf Course. It is a beautiful morning. The wind's getting up a little bit, so for a few of the big-name jockeys out here a little later, although Ollie hit some dead straight from what I hear, and Dean Yendall's semi-pro, become a professional. We'll have a chat to both those gents a little later when they arrive out here, because it is the 6th Epsom Golf Day, and this raises funds for the National Jockeys Trust. Over $200,000 has been raised, and we're going to have a chat to the man who's put it together a little later as well, and some of the big names out here. But it's quite apt that we are here with the discussion that is the focus of what we unfortunately talk about from the weekend. It was the All-Star Mile, but the most talked about issue has been once again another shocking fall as far as the jockeys are concerned, and sadly we lost Fluorescent Star as well. Matty Hyland's been a very busy man, more busy than he normally is, unfortunately, over the past few weeks, and he joins us live out here at Woodlands, and we appreciate your time, Matty. I know you've been on the phone to fellow jockeys, family members, 24/7 pretty much with every fall. How are you holding up?
Not too bad, Michael. It's been a funny old 3 weeks, hasn't it? But, not what we want to see. Hopefully, we don't see any more of it.
How is T.O. at the moment?
T.O.'s currently in... He's been discharged from Royal Melbourne yesterday, and he's in relatively good spirits, but he's got a C1 fracture that doesn't require surgery, so he's got a hard collar on, and he's going to be in for a long haul.
Geez, lucky. But C1, you can't hear me? Okay. C1, hang on, let me just turn a few of these things up. Can you hear me now?
I can. Yeah. Better?
C1 is a very nasty place to get a fracture. It could have been a hell of a lot worse, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, he's a very lucky boy, and thankfully it's he doesn't require that surgery, so hard collar on, 6 months probably on the sidelines or close enough to. You know, that'll be up to the doctors, and hopefully we see him back, you know, sooner rather than later.
Matty, when you think about the issue, particularly off the back of the Malum tweet, we're not just overemphasising Ben, but as Michael said earlier, there's a myriad of factors here, and I've got a couple of text messages from people as well saying, look, a lot of it's modern life in Melbourne too, like the ever-growing city, the traffic and the driving time is a contributor to fatigue as well for those who are riding at the provincial meetings five times a week, as most of the jockeys do. So there's no single root cause, but there's some issues that are probably more important than others. As Michael said with Andrew Jones, tight riding. Are we riding too tight? It was fascinating, the situation with Zach Purton and Mark Van Gestel in Hong Kong, where Purton basically said this bloke's too heavy-handed. And I think now when we look back, there's a very good reason why someone like Mark Van Gestel goes in with a very heavy hand when it comes to careless riding and so on. When you think about this issue, what are the most important elements of it for you?
Look, firstly, can I say in regards to Ben's tweet, there's probably a high level of emotion attached to that tweet, given the obvious circumstances, and there's a bit to take out of it as well. It's not a one-size-fits-all problem, that's for sure, and there's, you know, numerous stakeholders that have got vested interest in what the model looks like, and there's races on every day and every night, or not every night, but certainly for 10 months of the year or whatever it is, through the summer-spring period. Are we riding too tight? We've got really good stewards. We run inquiries every day of the week for, after races. Sometimes there's suspensions, sometimes there's not. We haven't seen incidents like we've seen in the last 3 weeks. We haven't seen them for ages, but from time to time, just the pure nature of the job, you're not going to avoid it, There's going to be the amount of racing that we run, there's going to be incidents from time to time. So,
is the risk of overreacting to this spate of falls, as you say, I think some will agree, some will disagree, but some of the social media has been, sometimes you get a run of things that doesn't necessarily mean there's a massive bigger problem, but is there an element of that in this too?
Oh, look, I think everyone's traumatised to some degree by what they've seen in the last 3 weeks. And, is there an overreaction? Probably for the people that are inside the bubble, that are sitting there, that are working day in and day out, because what they rely on is, I've heard a lot of discussions around reviews and this sort of thing. There's reviews every day of the week. They're called stewards inquiries, and then there'll be an outcome to that stewards inquiry, and there's your answer to the reason why that interference took place or why that incident took place. So, I think it's... Look, I can understand why people are, in some ways, there is an overreaction, if you want to call it that, but there's certainly, as I said, people are traumatised by when they see people injured on the track or getting carted off to hospital, but unfortunately, that's the nature of this job.
Matt, we heard Andrew Jones prior to 9 o'clock talking on this topic, and we hear a lot of quantitative stats thrown at this, 5% of jockeys only ride 4 days or more, all the percentages and all the numbers aspect. Is there any qualitative data that's collected by Racing Victoria or the Jockeys Association about jockey well-being, about their frame of mind at any given time, about how they're finding personally, emotionally, physically, what's being asked of them from the industry on a work basis day to day? It's becoming a real thing now. I heard a great podcast during the week.
It's part of every other work culture, isn't it?
Well, Gallup polls, they're huge pollsters globally. They are now running qualitative polls on all different working industries, because how people are feeling is such a big factor in how we do our jobs, how industries, how markets, how economies are reacting, and how they're being measured. You know, yeah. Do we do enough of that in racing?
Oh, I think we do. I think, look, let's just strip it back a bit. As I said, it's not a one-size-fits-all issue here. The jockeys are just one stakeholder group. There's multiple stakeholders that have got vested interest in the racing product. So, for obvious reasons, Racing Victoria's role is to regulate the sport, is to promote the sport, and is to generate the income for the sport. And then their role is to distribute that income amongst the participants, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing to your question about jockeys and the welfare and the well-being, and we've got programs in the background that operate in that space. But I'll make one thing clear, because I got an interesting text 5 minutes before I came on. Racing Victoria, we have had discussions with Racing Victoria, particularly from their end, where they have proposed to us that if jockeys are overworked or feel as though they're being overworked, then maybe we can come in and regulate their working week. I can tell you that's not what our members want as a collective. So if you don't want that, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You either manage yourself or
so
be managed.
Do you disagree then with maybe the thread of Ben Mellum and others that are saying too much racing, too much work, too much stress, because at the end of the day they can determine what meetings they want to ride at? Which I know there has been a lot of feedback to that tweet. So is it as simple as saying that, Matt, or not?
Look, I think Ben's in a unique situation like a lot of our leading riders. He's in demand. And when you put a carrot in front of people and you say, here's opportunity, and you leave it to them to manage that opportunity, they go for that opportunity as often as they want, you know?
But we see big-name jockeys like Damien Lane, Damien Oliver, been riding on Fridays.
Yeah.
Sale Fridays. And
still a choice.
It is.
Indirectly, it's a choice. So in some ways, the industry will say, well, you manage yourself. So this is my point around, you can't have your cake and eat it too. If you don't want to be managed by the industry and you want to be able to manage your own working week, then do it. That's the first thing. You can't expect the industry to put the show on to fit in with individuals. It's got to fit in with the whole stakeholder group.
With opportunity comes pressure. You know, it goes hand in hand. And as you just pointed out, you know, we've got so much racing. There's so much opportunity, not only for jockeys to go and ride winners, but for owners to have runners and to earn prize money, et cetera, et cetera. It's the pressure management, isn't it? I think that's the point you're making, is it's on the individual to operate as a business and maybe become more professional, become more deliberate in how they're spacing their week, their year, etc.
Yeah, if we look at a jockey's role, they get paid to be a jockey, ride on race day. And that's the majority of the time people actually see what they're doing, is on race day. And if you look at it, that's only a part of what their working week looks like. There's the travel component, the wasting and the fitness regime component. And then there is this high level of work that's occurring in the background that you know, they're there probably filling a void for a significant staff shortage we've got in the industry. And, you know, to our point around, you know, the increase of jump outs. It's an expectation that they're going to fill that void. They've done it for a long period of time. We're getting to the point where we're sort of saying, well, you know, make them official. Make two sets of those jump outs official. You know, they're contributing to the industry. They're doing that. You know, that work in the mornings that's totally unpaid on, and women are prayer that they're going to get a ride out of it. And I think that it's a changed landscape.
Is the income generating model that's currently in place, and the future one with this emphasis on night racing and twilights and all that sort of thing, I know they get 12 to 14% more income from a night meeting than a day meeting, is the future going to be, and we're thinking about the plans for Moonee Valley and Caulfield and all that sort of stuff, is that going to compromise jockey welfare? I take on board everything you say about their sole traders and all that sort of stuff, and there's a lot of merit in that, there's no doubt about that. But is the model that is being imposed on the jockeys in the future, with what we know about what all these proposals are and plans are, is it going to continue to potentially compromise jockey welfare with fatigue and so on?
Look, it comes down to your personal management.
Does it though?
Well, it does.
Yeah.
Plain and simply, it does. Mm. And if you feel as though you're doing too much, then you need to back off.
Yep.
Simple as that. And I think that to actually expect that you're going to change the current model, now, to your point, we don't want to see any more twilights, in our view, a VJA view.
That's what I'm asking. Is the Jockeys Association pushing back a little bit on some of these night twilight ambitions?
We don't want to see an increase of twilights or night meetings, right? Yep. We understand where it fits into the program. We understand that it's great for the turnover and the revenue to the sport, which is then distributed out to all the participants. But we think it's at its, we think it's right at its maximum now. And then our members' responsibility is to fit into that program. That's their responsibility.
You've ridden races. None of us have ever ridden in a race and ever will. Do you believe fatigue has been a factor in these last three falls?
No, I don't. I don't. I just think you've got to look at the incidents in isolation. It's very unfortunate that we've seen it 3 weeks in a row. But you've got to look at the incidents in isolation. Let the inquiries run their course, right? And the outcomes will be what they'll be. But if you've got two horses that have unfortunately got too close to heels and clipped heels, you know, that's you know, to some degree, there's a careless aspect of that.
Well,
I asked you that
a week ago. Now you're starting. I mean, one incident doesn't change, but are we racing too tight, too recklessly in certain instances when there's big money, big stakes on offer?
I don't think there's, you know, I don't think we're riding too tight. I don't think we're riding any differently. I can't really answer that question because I'm not out there riding. I'm viewing it the same as you are. But if you take Glenn Boss, for example, and the question was put to him yesterday, he's probably the most recent jockey that's retired. He said, we're not riding any tighter than what we've ridden in the last 5 years. We've just seen three incidents that'll have their own set of circumstances as to the reasons why they happened. Let's wait and see what the stewards' inquiries, what the results of those stewards' inquiries are.
So what I'm thinking about is the future, and this is about Moonee Valley and Caulfield and the inner track, and that's another issue here, is I don't think anyone who was wincing about the idea of the inner track at Caulfield is going to feel any less concerned than they were, but Moonee Valley have their signature night. Many Caulfield want to do it as well. If the industry is saying, and the individual clubs are saying, we want more, is this where the Jockeys Association, for one, says, we don't care what your income models are for the future and what your ambitions are, we are drawing a line in the sand of what we have now, and we were never going to agree to any more than what we've got now?
My understanding is that there won't be any more night meetings, not in the short term. I think Caulfield will pick up the slack of Moonee Valley when Moonee Valley's closed. So it won't decrease, but I'm not expecting that it's going to increase. There has been a proposal to increase twilights pre-Christmas, and our position on that was we objected to that. We said we don't want to see an increase to twilights. We think there's enough.
Mm. Do you put messages out to your riders after incidents like this?
I haven't in the last 3 weeks, but I've had a lot of communication with them, you know, particularly the riders that are there. You know, let me tell you, lads, I have a lot of conversations with a lot of jockeys over a week, and as I pointed out on the weekend, no one wants to see it. Everyone's feeling a bit flat on what they're seeing. Let's just take a deep breath and just let the process run its course. I get the you know, that it's traumatic, and it's no one wants to, you know, no one wants to roll up to work and see people injured at work. You know, it's
It's interesting that someone drew a comparison with me yesterday about the Melbourne Cup, and we have the falls and the horses being injured in the Cup, and there's this instant reaction and regulations and rules come in place. But there's a human element here where, as you're saying, the jockeys can think their way through to their own solution if they feel like they're putting themselves into a vulnerable position. It's such a unique situation after three weekends of Saturday falls. Overreaction. There's a risk of a clear risk of that here. Is that's the general takeaway from?
It's hard to explain to someone on the outside of the bubble, isn't it?
It's a very hard
conversation
because they still see the fall.
Correct.
And in the Melbourne Cup, when we saw a fall and a horse is injured,
yeah,
there's an immediate response.
And it's the nature, no matter how sanitised society becomes, the nature of this beast that we're in is vulnerability to injury. Yes. I mean, they're still key ingredient risks, aren't they? That there's nothing we can do to reinvent horse racing that's going to reduce a lot of those major risks.
In a lot of ways, I know this has occurred on three Saturdays in a row, but there wouldn't be a week go by without a phone call from an early morning track work incident to a jockey who's off to hospital for scans. There wouldn't be a week that goes by.
We had one on the farm last week.
There you go. So it's the nature of this job, and I can't answer the question why it's occurred 3 weeks in a row. We've seen it. Hopefully that's the end of it and we don't see it. But, you know, the nature of the job is that it'll happen again at some point. It's just...
Interesting text has been sent through to me by a senior administrator. Do we need to consider a model? I don't know whether you could do this, but do we need to consider a model like Japan, where you have the JRA and NAR races with separate horse and jockey pools for night meetings, like a completely different category of participants for night and day?
Let me tell you.
I think it'd be very hard to implement.
But. Yeah, there's 140 flat riders in Victoria, and another 40 on top of that, picnic and jumps riders. But if you look at the 140 flat riders, and we've got, they're probably broken into three categories. You've got your elite 30, if you like, that are in demand. Then you've got the next bracket that are chasing opportunity. And then you've got the next bracket after that that are usually subsidising their income some way or another, right? So it's not a one-size-fits-all situation here.
Yep.
And you've got to remember, from our point of view, from a VJA point of view, we've got to represent 140 jockeys. So when I completely respect what Ben puts out there, but Ben's issue is completely different to jockey number 50 or 60, if you like.
Yep.
You know, so do we want, we've had these discussions about, and Racing Victoria have come to us and said to us, if your people are working too hard, do you want us to regulate their working hours? The answer is no, we don't. Mm. But we want our members to be able to manage their own working week. And it is frustrating, and it is, you know,
in some ways, are they jumping at shadows? When jockeys say, oh, if I don't go and do this, then I'll fall off the carousel. Is it something about the VJA and the relationship with its own jockeys to sort of almost say, look, sometimes I think you guys are jumping at shadows. Like, you're fearing a worst-case scenario when your relationship with that trainer is better than you think and so on. Is there a little bit of a myth about some of their fears?
Well, if Ben Mallum doesn't go and do 8 jump-outs for Kieran Maher this morning, just using this as an example... There's 8 opportunities that will go to someone else.
Yep.
Plain and simple.
Yeah, so
and if he
real.
Doesn't do those 8 jump
he
outs
won't get the ride.
this morning, he will not get the ride.
Yep. Yep.
So
yep.
he's got to go there, do that 8 at those 8
jump outs.
So
therefore, what you're saying is he doesn't have the choice that you said earlier.
Just think of this, though, Matt. Just think of this. If he's doing 8 official trials and he's getting paid for it, for exactly the same work.
He feels better about it, yeah.
And if he was getting paid for that work he was doing every week.
Yep.
Maybe he'll have a different view as to whether he needs to go to that meeting or those extra meetings a week.
Okay.
If you think about it like that.
Yep.
So coming back to that difference between official trials and jump outs, which surely they're one in the same. Why don't they get paid for jump outs?
Because the cost will then get pushed to the owners. And
so what?
Racing Victoria has said publicly previously that they are trying to minimise the cost for owners out there, because trainers won't absorb it, race clubs won't absorb it. It gets paid, passed directly on to owners, and
but
they're trying to reduce the amount of cost.
But if we
have a lot of syndicates that race horses full of 2%,
whether that's right or wrong,
the extra cost of that 2% in the syndicate is $1.80.
We all own horses here. Yeah. If Matt tells me now, righto, you've got a horse in a jump out next week, and there's going to be a fee attached to that for the ride, my immediate reaction is, well, that's fair. There's a professional doing a job to help educate my horse and get it ready for a race when it can win prize money. That is surely part and parcel of the training program. And surely it should be rewarded as a paid part of a jockey's
week.
So
what fee would the VGA like to see for jump outs?
I'd like to see 2 sets of these major official trials a week that are run on a weekly basis. I'd like to see them made official, become official, just replicate the official model. If there has to be a small deduction to what a jockey's currently getting for an official trial, then so be it. But it's if if those trials, you tell me those trials jump outs that are held at Cranbourne this morning are any different to the ones that are held that are official the following
week? I think a lot of punters would like them to become official.
Absolutely.
Because there's more transparency.
There's a model there
there's
in
more
New
clarity.
Yeah. There's a model
but
there
if,
in
if
New
I'm
South
your Wales. Standard Victorian owner and I own 2 between 2 and 5% of a horse, which is probably what the syndication model is, the extra cost to me of that is...
Nobody's kicking off over it.
But is so small that I'm not even noticing it. Is that right, Matty? That... The burden to the owner under the syndication model.
That's easy for me to say, Matt. I'm probably not going to answer that question, but I'm just going to purely look at it from a jockey's perspective.
Fair enough.
Hey, Matty, you are always very generous with your time because the public needs to get updated on these jockeys and appreciate it. Your passion, your dedication in this role speaks for itself. Can you give us an update on how Jamie Carr is going at the moment?
So Jamie's... I expect he's to be discharged from Royal Melbourne today and will go to a rehab facility. Not quite sure for how long, but I've been in constant contact with her father, John, over the past 9 days, and I'll probably have a chat with him at some stage today and hopefully catch up with him for a coffee, and we'll see where we end up there.
So the good news was that there was no significant damage to the brain, bleeding on the brain from the reports that we heard, but moving from a hospital to a rehab facility underlines the seriousness of just how bad this knock was. And what's the recuperation look like?
I'd be only guessing, Michael, okay. and I'm not qualified to say how long Jamie's recovery is going to be, but I think we can all understand that she had a pretty significant injury. Mm. And thankfully, you know, talking to her father, I think it was Saturday morning when he rang me, or text me, and she's on the road to recovery. She's talking and communicating well with her family and that sort of thing. But she's, you know, it's not just a straight-up concussion. She's had a significant head trauma to some degree, and we've just, you know, she's just there for the family. Have just got to be given that privacy, let her recover, and I'm sure somewhere down the track she'll be able to...
Just one quick little one just off the back of that. We've seen a lot of discussion in the past week. We've seen court cases from the AFL, past AFL players with head trauma from years gone by. You rode in an era where there was very little done in the way of concussion, get back on the horse, knocked out, getting back on the horse. Is there much being done in that area for racing and past jockeys who may have had serious issues from bad head knocks?
I wouldn't say there's a lot of from past jockeys that have say that replicate what's happening in the AFL coming out, but let's be honest, it's a buzzword, concussion, at the minute, and it's probably not until later in life, you know, that people experience the issues, whether it's dementia issues, and my father's got Alzheimer's as we speak, you know, and is in a home, you know, he had several head injuries. So does it catch up? Who knows? It's just a really extraordinary space, that, you know, and it's...
Are we doing tests? Are we doing reports, research?
Yeah, Racing Victoria are pretty heavily invested in concussion reviews, and certainly if you look at the protocols that are in place, it's interesting, isn't it, that there's no national policy on concussion policy. Victoria has an automatic 12-day stand down. You know, Queensland, you can jump on a horse 3 or 4 days later. You know, that's extraordinary in itself.
Just I know. There's a lot of guesswork, and the last thing we want to do is guess, but she's the biggest superstar in world racing in the saddle. Is it feasible that the nature of this situation with Jamie Carr is that she may not be back for many months?
Look, again, I can't really answer that. I can't answer that question.
Matty, I appreciate your time once again. Fingers crossed that we don't need to speak to you for quite some time in the nicest possible way, because that means we haven't got falls. But keep us updated with everything.
Good on you. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, Matty. Matty Highland does an amazing job, the boss of the Victorian Jockeys Association. We'll take a quick break. Froggy Newitt here to day out on Saturday. 3 wins, including the feature Alistair Clark. It'll be interesting to get his take on the situation as well.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
Swazuro in front of running on time, then Bankmore. 2 further back, Japanese Emperor, who's working into the clear. Swazuro the leader with about 100 metres to go from Bankmore, who's pegging it back. Swazuro grabbed by Bankmore. Japanese Emperor is behind them, but Bankmore took the front, and Bankmore. Bankmore has won it from Swazuro and Japanese Emperor. Photo for fourth.
Oh, he's a beautiful looking horse, isn't he, Bankmore? And Froggy knew it was at his best, claiming the Group 2 Alistair Clark, one of three winners on All-Star Mile Day. Froggy, congratulations. What a day at the office.
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, it was nice to get some good rides on the day and be able to capitalise even better.
Froggy, the Bankmore race, it was a train wreck of a race to watch if you're a punter, but you were just in the sweet spot. That there was no speed, it was stop start, and when you look back at the replay, the only one you want to be on is C. Newitt and Bankmore, because all the other runners seem to be so disadvantaged by the tempo.
It was beautiful from where I was sitting, Matty.
Exactly.
He began, he put himself into the right spot and got off the fence straight away, as soon as I possibly could. And from then it was just a matter of the horse sort of babysitting me out three wide to drop off, and then once you got into clear room, he was always going to win.
You seem to be really enjoying yourself of late, Froggy. I know winning an Adelaide Cup and then a three-peat at Moonee Valley, including a Group 2, is going to do a lot for the happiness. But just in general sense, watching you during the week, winning a race, you seem up and about. Life must be pretty good from where you're sitting at the moment.
Going very well, mate. Life's very, very good at the moment. And obviously, it's been a very good weekend to me over the past years this weekend. But when your tail's up and you're riding plenty of winners and getting on nice horses, it makes it even better.
You're the last jockey to talk about fatigue and so on, because you are an addict. You're a riding addict every single day. You'll ride a Group 1 one day and be at Stony Creek the next day, Froggy. You're a rare beast in that sense, in that every single day is Christmas Day for you as a jockey, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's whether I win a maiden at Stony Creek or a Group 1 at Moonee Valley or wherever, they're all the same to me. I've got the addiction of competing and winning, and it's obviously a big help when you don't have to waste. But I enjoy it, and it's what provides for me, my partner, and my five boys. So I'm happy to continue to do it.
On the flip side, when you're in the rooms, race days around the state, do you see, or even interstate, do you see peers that are doing it a little tougher, that probably aren't in a great mental spot, or a jockey's pretty good at internalising those sort of battles and not showing them as competitors?
Yeah, I think we are pretty good at hiding it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I go to the races every now and then pretty flat, but obviously, like I said, I don't have to waste. I think it's the guys that really, really struggle with the weight that probably struggle the most, but obviously we sort of get around each other, try and have a bit of a joke and a laugh in the room, and make it a little bit lighthearted and get through the day.
There's different sources of fatigue, Froggy, and we use you a lot on the Big V, and you're always travelling on a long road trip to wherever you're going, and you're based at Point Cook, which puts you sort of equally able to pounce on the east and the west and the north. When it comes down to tiredness and things like that Ben Mellum has been talking about, is a lot of it got to do with, you know, the horrible traffic we jockeys encounter going from one side of Melbourne to the other, as much as the actual working hours of being a jockey?
Yeah, I think so. I think the guys waiting it, I would say it's got a big majority of the fatigue, because I know when I've got a ride light, which is not very often, it's only sort of your autumn and your spring carnival time where I've got a ride under sort of 53, 52 and that. I get grumpy, pissed off, hungry, tired, fatigued, but the guys that are doing it every day, I couldn't imagine what they go through. So, like I said, I'm very fortunate that I can get up, and I'm at the jump outs this morning at Cranbourne. I've already had an egg and bacon roll and my regular can of V for the morning, so I'm good to go for the rest of the day. But these guys that sit across the room, and I reckon if they could grab me by the throat and give me one, they'd be more than happy to. They're obviously pretty envious, but obviously that's the job that we chose to do. So we've just got to soldier on, I would suspect.
No wonder you're up and about if you're kicking your day off with a can of V.
But you wouldn't be eating the egg and bacon roll in the jockey's room, would you, Froggy? That would be the final insult.
Mate, right in front of them. I sit as close as I can so they can get the watch of them and put them off their game a bit.
On the wasting aspect, and I guess the fatigue seems to be a word we've used a lot this morning, but the mental and physical impact that comes with wasting. It wasn't so long ago that we lifted the minimum weights. Is that something that Racing Victoria could perhaps look at then to, you know, just lift those minimums again, even by a kilo, just to provide that little bit more support for the riders that do have to waste to get down to these lower weights?
Well, you're probably asking the wrong person because I don't want them to go up at all because that's where I get my bread and butter from. So the minimum weight, like if I didn't ride 54... on a Saturday, on a Wednesday, I'd probably go to the race to have 1-2 rides. Five or six of my rides have got 54, so you lift that minimum up. But then where do you draw the line? You go up to 55, then in 6-12 months' time, people are saying, well, it's still too light, we need to go up another kilo. At the end of the day, those horses down on the minimum can't win races, basically. You're probably asking the wrong person about the weights because I'd leave them how they are.
I think
they're great.
Hey, Froggy, just a quick one. I know you're about to jump on another horse in a moment, but 2-1s. Keats, did they get the tactics wrong? Did you go a bit too hard on Keats to try and, you know, give him his best chance, or was he just not up to it?
Well, he definitely ran below best. I've got no doubt about that because he literally went 600 metres and was a beaten horse, so... that's his style of racing. I got off and I said he's probably a big track horse rather than a Moonee Valley horse because the big tracks, there's a lot less pressure early in the race, whereas he can get into his rhythm and sustain those 11.5-12 furlong sectionals and can sustain it. Whereas Moonee Valley, everyone jumped, wanted to go, well, Gentleman Roy breathed down his neck for the first 200 metres, whereas at Sandown, he's already got that margin on those type of horses. So I wouldn't say that we got the tactics wrong. I just think that the style of race, the horses that were in the race at Moonee Valley probably played against him. But in saying that, the horse was below par, but I know in Gavin's stable, he'll bounce back.
And Munamex, just airborne, he wouldn't have been out of place in the All-Star Mile.
Yeah, he's going terrific. And speaking to Hutchie, they might have a little throw up the stumps at a race like maybe the Doncaster Prelude or something like that. And if he strike a wet track, he definitely would be out of his depth because he's absolutely flying. And that did look his race, admittedly. There was a lack of depth in it, but he was going to win that race a long way out.
Have you locked yourself in?
I'm always locking myself into any horse that I can get on at the moment. It's hard, like, You win a Group 2, you win the Alistair Clark Stakes and get the drag straight away. Joy's riding it this week. So you lock yourself in whenever you can because there's plenty of guys floating around that want to take them.
Is Bankmore going to the Australian Cup?
He's going to run in
the Australian Cup and Joy's going to ride him. So we're trying to find another one to beat him.
Gee, you got sacked and you won the Alistair Clark, hey? It's a tough world.
Tough game, mate.
Hey, Froggy, you've got the cash from Saturday, though. Well done. Riding outstandingly well.
No worries, mate. Thanks very much.
Good on you, Froggy. Craig Newitt joining us there. We'll take a quick break. We want to come back, talk about the All-Star Mile, the Beaten Brigade. We want to talk about the Valley. We've got the Golden Slipper as well. Ollie will be arriving here around about 11 o'clock. Dean Yendall as well. Plenty more to talk about. And as we go to the break, have a look at this magnificent.
Oof.
The Epsom Cup, National Jockeys Trust, and the official Golf Day trophy is here. Do you know the first winner in 2017? The captain was Brent Thompson. And then last year, Jake Norton's got his name on this in 2018. And last year, your great mate, Matty, Jason Swift, who, of course, is the grandson of...
Scobie
Brinkley.
So Swifties, just very quickly, his image was up on the first tee there with his banner there, and I sent him a photo and said, oh, this is looking good. You're putting people off their drives. And then I sent him a photo of it. It's fallen down in the wind. Oh, he's very upset about the image crumbling. So we've got to do some corrective surgery on Swifty's banner.
Hey, speaking of jockeys, there's been some news on the rumour file this morning, which I think has been confirmed, that Joe Moreira will be riding in Australia for at least a three-month stint based with Chris Waller.
Wow,
so
massive.
And I want to debate the internationals. Hutchie, Leviathan owner of Munamek, put out an interesting tweet on the weekend which had a lot of feedback as well about the international jockeys coming to Australia and just slaying them. More on the other side of this.
Racing Pulse. This is The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Matty Stewart and Mick Sharkey here. We've been discussing a lot of the situations before the jockeys, and we're going to have a focus on the actual racing. Now, we are live from Woodlands, and the reception's not that great here. It's a beautiful venue, but unfortunately we're having some issues with the SMS machine that is coming through, so bear with us. We'll get to a few SMSs as we can. One text message I have received, though, is from Matty Williams, trainer down at Warrnambool, just on the jump-outs and trial situation. Mm-hmm. Matty said, if we have official trials at Hamilton or Casterton, we'll have three-horse trials. Our work riders are our trial riders as well, and they are not allowed to ride in official trials, hence why we have jump-outs in this area. It's a valid point.
And for every question, it's so complicated.
It is.
Every angle we explore, there's a counterpoint to everything, and I don't envy any of these decision-makers, but all I know is it feels as though something has been laid on the line now, demanding answers, and that's not to say that the answers are easily explained, or there are any.
What doesn't feel right, though, is the idea of work for no pay. That concept doesn't sit well with me. I think there's an expectation that if you're out there doing a job to help the trainer, the owner, etc., there needs to be remuneration for that.
Whether the industry may feel that there's a broader package of payments that it's somehow absorbed into or something like that, maybe that's the way they see it. I don't know.
Well, I think it was, as Andrew Jones said, it was part of the original EBA deal that they increased the amount of trials or race day ride fees, which encapsulated free jump outs. So I think that was all discussed and debated, and it will continue to be debated moving forward. Your little boy, the inevitable, what a run in the All-Star Mile. I thought he was absolutely outstanding, and we're going to see a lot more of him on the mainland now with that type of run, won't we?
Hard to know. I had a good chat to Scotty Brunton yesterday, actually, about the fact that they, right here and now, that's the last thing on their mind, is that they've had this mission that they've nearly pulled off, and I was so happy for David Perez because there would have been a lot of pressure on Scott Brunton.
Great ride.
Dump the Tassie jockey, whack on a superstar and so on, and I thought David Perez did an amazing job. So I think the inevitable, and this comes to the wider discussion, we're going to talk about Dubai Honour and there is a bit of a myth about the power of the mainland stars, and I think the inevitable sort of prove that the gap between these alleged mainland stars and the rest, including international ratings and against international competition. You know, what Dubai Honour did, for instance, we'll talk about, I know we're not talking about him now, but, you know, it exposed what the inevitable exposed as well, is don't get carried away with the legend of, Alligator Blood and all these horses. They are not necessarily...
Well, they're not unbeatable.
They're not a league above the horses that we think are battlers. They're just not.
He was honest, Alligator Blood. Yeah. The disappointment again was on Thunderstruck.
Heat stress.
He had heat stress. Mm. We've reached out to the stable, haven't had any reply as to how he is this morning. But the heat stress, even Daniel Moore, like, they went for him early, and it was not so far, was not the, I suppose, way that he dropped out of the race on the point of the turn. It was, he got beaten 6.5 lengths, and horses like Stacey Bond ran past him in the straight. So it's, that's well, not he, the real on no, Thunderstruck, even when no, he's been racing
but two stars
below
back,
what we believe.
But he was average two stars back too, wasn't
he? But he'd been beaten a length by these horses.
Yeah. Well, maybe this time around he's just, you know, and it's a race-to-race situation. Just, you know, sort of footy's back, you know, and you're watching some of these aging stars. Not saying I'm Thunderstruck's aging, but things don't go right for them every single week, every week in, week out, every time they go to the races. There's the chance the race won't be run to suit. Tempo, the weather affects them. Oh, that's why, as we were saying last week, I think it's silly to say attach D-days to horses because the variables are... so many, and we don't, they can't speak, so they can't tell us exactly how they're going or how they're feeling.
Interesting, too, the constant criticism. Ben Asghari was very, very good on this yesterday on racing.com, explaining his dissatisfaction with elements of the All-Star Mile. But funny enough, the star horses suited at Weight for Age completely capitulated for different reasons, didn't they? Like, Alan Kerr never fronted up, the overseas star.
Well, he was parachuted into it.
I'm Thunderstruck never turned up. Laws of Indices had got a sore back from Machine Murphy.
Refreshing was Machine Murphy's post-race comment?
I gave it
a bad ride. It's all my fault.
Yeah, but the Weight for Age stars didn't rise to the Weight for Age occasion, did they? For whatever individual reasons, they just didn't turn up on the day.
Stacey Bond ran on nicely, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Gentleman Roy capitulated. Pounding was a big run. If he had drawn a barrier, Pounding could have been a top five finisher, and Nugget ran really well. We'll talk to Ollie when he gets here about his run. What did you make of the Keats performance? Obviously, Froggy said he didn't run up to his best.
No, well, he didn't. He was... you know, group place at his start before, so clearly he's capable of a lot better than what he showed on Saturday, which was unfortunate because I don't know why, but he became the whipping boy in that race, didn't he, leading up to it. A lot of people wanted to hone in on Keats as a horse that shouldn't be in the race, but I don't know. I think that's quite unfair. It was a good... It's all about votes. So they ran a marketing... The ownership group ran a marketing campaign to get the horse into a race. They did that. They achieved their goal. Unfortunately for them, the horse didn't turn up on the day. But why should that then become a point of negativity,
especially
when you assess the race?
Given those sort of horses are part of the idea of the race. One thing that Ben Asghari again said yesterday was, which I agree with, I think... The most refreshing point of difference of the All-Star Mile is the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity presented to the ambassadors. You know, the guy who won the $250,000 who... So,
there's a charity element in that as well. And we've seen different ambassadors win and say, this has changed my life, you know, I'll pay the mortgage, I'll be able to do this for my family, whatever else.
Yep.
And for that gentleman whose name I can't recall to make
a history
point
with the stable,
before he won it to say, oh, you know what? But I saw some people doing it tough with these floods, and if I'm lucky enough to win, I'd like to do something for that. That was a real highlight for me, the way he spoke after the race.
If I'm promoting the All-Star Mile, I'm going to promote the ambassadors ahead of the race, ahead of the horses, ahead of the conditions, because I agree with Asghari. I think what was the most illuminating story of the whole thing was these people who had these life-changing moments. Why not double their opportunity, make it absolutely life-changing, and have it as the race that it's like that Slotto raffle type situation? And because there are concerns about the race, it should not be Weight for Age.
No.
It should not be dropping wild cards and emergencies over the top of horses that are legitimately voted for.
Yeah.
So there are chinks in the armor of the race, but the one thing that everyone goes, oh well, look at this guy or this whoever who's had this opportunity, it overrides everything else, I think, for me.
There perhaps needs to be a bit more clarity or a bit more discussion around some of the big-name horses that get votes because people want to see them in the race. You know, maybe Stable say, it's not on our radar. We're not going towards
this
race.
Well, they kept saying that with I Wish I Win, but the voters kept voting.
Yeah, so something's being lost in translation. In the communication of the people who are voting, something's being missed. You know,
website, I Wish I Win, unlikely to run.
Something like
where
that.
Where you do your votes.
Yeah. But it has...
Did it work on Golden Slipper?
There's immediate comparisons.
I didn't go, Michael.
I was at Moonee Valley, so I didn't see anything other than the races for Golden Slipper Day.
The crowd at Moonee Valley?
8,000.
Yeah.
When the All-Star Mile...
I think they got 12,000, almost around 12,000 at Flemington the week before.
They got nearly 7,000 for the Sandown edition of the Blue Diamond, which even the MRC thought wasn't a good crowd, which bemused me. But
Michael Brayle will be out here a little later. You boys can get him on, I think, during the big
feat. Is that a disappointing crowd? All-Star Mile, all the promotion, all the bells and whistles, 8,000. Wouldn't they have expected 15,000?
Do you know what it does? I reckon, Matt, it tells you the window of time that racing has at this time of year to draw a crowd. 8,000 with footy back.
First round of footy.
I think that's a solid result. But as footy, like we, I went to the footy on
391,000 people went to round one of the AFL.
What was the day game? What was the day game on Saturday?
Oh, it was terrible.
North Melbourne, North West Coast.
Well, therefore, therefore,
I'm only joking because he's North Melbourne.
Well, but then, hang on a minute.
How many were there?
You say first round AFL, but there was only one AFL game that could have dragged
the crowd. But if you're going to the footy on Thursday night or Friday night, do you back up and go to the Valley on the Saturday?
Suburban practice games.
But who's going to the footy Thursday? Who's trying to do all three? Hardly anyone.
That's what I'm saying. If you go to the footy on one of those two blockbusters, are you then going to back up and go to the Valley on Saturday? Probably not.
I still say they're a split division. I think this is a bit of a myth, the AFL participation.
You had cricket grand finals running Saturday. You've got the last of the suburban footy practice games where it's basically, if you're playing and you're into racing, you're not going to say, oh, I can't play this way, coach. I've got to go to the All-Star Mile. So the time pressures are increasing as we get into this.
I think you're picking little elements that you're saying are major factors.
Hey, we need to take a break. 10 o'clock news. We come back, we'll continue to discuss and debate. We'll also talk about the five Group 1s in Sydney Slipper Day, the Hong Kong Derby. If anyone knows how to make Wi-Fi work around here, let us know, because we can't open any of your SMSs. It's frustrating. We're getting annoyed because we want to hear what you've got to say. We'll keep working on it. We'll have more after this. Welcome back to The Verdict Live from Woodlands Golf Club. It's the 6th Annual Epsom Golf Day, raising money for the National Jockeys Trust. And Brad Bishop just sent me a text, boys. Very kind of you, Brad, saying he spoke to Michael Ken Jr. this morning. They're still planning to go to the Queen Elizabeth Stakes with I'm Thunderstruck. Said he pulled up horribly immediately after the race, but he is all good now. And you've spoken to Mike Moroney.
Yeah, I just had a chat to Mike Moroney about Alan Kerr. He said, look, it was the wrong race, as it turns out. And interesting insight into Dubai Honour as well. He spoke to William Haggas about both Dubai Honour and Alan Kerr. And Haggas said Dubai Honour's a dry tracker, and that's what we saw in Sydney on Saturday. And Alan Kerr needs cut out of the ground. He said, look, he's a work in progress, but he said, look, we're going to go to the Queen Elizabeth in Sydney, hopefully get a bit of cut out of the track, and we may see something like the real Alan Kerr. And he said, look, the jock did sit up. He said it was just one of those, it was just the wrong scenario for the horse. He said, look, but there's still a flicker of confidence from Mike Moroney that he can go to Sydney and we might see something like the real Alan Kerr in what's going to be it's going to have a lot of glittering names in it, isn't it, the Queen Elizabeth?
Yeah, especially the international factor as well. Let's focus on Sydney now, Golden Slipper Day. And it was a day for Coolmore. It was a roller coaster ride for Coolmore during the race, but Shinzo giving Chris Waller his first Golden Slipper. And Ryan Moore, what a ride, the international jockey.
And at Big Odds, Exploring shows the way. On the outside, Arkansas Kid, Cylinder Ruse up on the inside. Hard on the inside, Shinzo starting to run on. Cylinder takes the lead of the 200 from Shinzo giving chase. Cylinder, Shinzo, and right down the outside with a big run late is MP coming home, Hard King's Gambit. But Shinzo and Ryan Moore have drawn clear to win the Golden Slipper. Shinzo beats Cylinder, King's Gambit third, Don Corleone fourth, and MP.
I think this guy, he's an amazing strength to me, and we haven't killed ourselves to win it, but it means a lot to us, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Talking about Charlie Duckworth, what did Steph just come up and say to you?
She couldn't talk. Yeah, so that's what it means. She's been a great strength to me, and like Charlie, Steph, she's a great strength, and she's got my back the whole 365 days a year.
If Chris Waller can't get a sponsorship by Kleenex, his people aren't working hard enough.
But isn't it great that someone so big, individual wins mean so much? I think that's really refreshing for Chris Waller.
It's surprising that is his first slipper, isn't it? You could imagine there would have been a little bit of pressure when you've achieved so much. It's the biggest race prestige-wise in Sydney. The Everest is the biggest now, but that's the new kid on the block. If you haven't won a Golden Slipper in Sydney, it's almost like you haven't won a Melbourne Cup in a major trainer, you know? So that would have relieved some pressure, I'd imagine.
Well, it took a long time, Shark, for Chris Waller to show a lot of interest in the babies, you know? It took a long time for his focus to shift to trying to win the Golden Slipper, and I think the fact that he's now won every major, I think his emotion, I think the great international jockey and all that, but still, to me, what was refreshing about Sydney and what everyone's highlights were on the day was that the Golden Slipper didn't resonate as much as Animo. It didn't resonate as much as other things that were going on the day. And I don't mind that shift away from the Golden Slipper being the focus of all attention and so on, because it, to me, it represents a bit of a focusing on the things that really matter, and that's Animo, and that's the Dubai Honours, and the big weight for age challenges coming up. The fact that I didn't care much about the Golden Slipper this year, I think, is not a bad thing, because I think it's sort of, it shifts, it indicates, a lot of people were the same, a lot of people, it wasn't their main focus in Sydney on the day, and I don't mind that, you know.
No, well, it's funny, isn't it? Both Shinzo and Animo will end up at Stud. I would argue that Animo is far and away a more important stallion than Shinzo.
Correct.
He's ever going to be.
Yeah.
You know, Shinzo might be a fantastic source of,
and he'll be 30
two-year-old speed, and
they
may well train on. But Animo, to go to Stud as a, well, he might be a more than nine-time Group 1 winner by the time he gets there, but currently standing a nine-time Group 1 winner, champion horse, and you can say that now, I think, after nine Group 1s, that may go overseas, and if he races well, he is incredibly significant to the Australian breeding market.
And how big is this international mission now? Because what we saw with Dubai Honour is, and there was a lot of social media about this yesterday, was that these haggis horses that come here expose the total lack of depth all the time in our middle distance weight for age ranks. But if Animo can, A, Queen Elizabeth, knock off this haggis horse, and then go and internationally do a So You Think, I think it helps sort of give us a little argument back the other way about these constant concerns about...
Well, that we can, you know, So You Think proved it. We can, when our best horses go over there and compete at a middle distance, Elstrom did it. Starcraft did it. You know, they didn't do it every time because it is incredibly competitive, that distance range in Europe and other parts of the world. And in Australia, we tend to get a standout and then a group that take turns winning. You know, that's because we have focused on two-year-old speed in the past. Oh, well, we do.
Animo's become more important than Winx. He's become more important because he's got a bigger point to prove.
There's a point to prove. But I think his overseas campaign is as significant as So You Think's. Yep. Personally, that's my view on it.
Yeah, I agree.
The Chris Waller aspect and the Golden Slipper. You know, I love the business of Chris Waller. I'm fascinated by, yes, he's a horse trainer, but he's an incredibly smart business person. And as he was coming through the training ranks in New South Wales, what he did for a number of seasons was identify the weakest possible demographic on Saturday racing was staying races. And he had those races, and still does, loaded to the back teeth with runners. So he kept winning.
Imported,
you know what happens when you keep
runners,
winning?
Imported runners.
Somebody sticks a microphone under your nose and you get another opportunity to sell yourself, sell your business, talk about what you're doing. He sat up the top of that premiership and he just kept flooding these races, opportunities to speak, opportunities to put his brand forward. It was a masterstroke in hindsight, wasn't it? Well, and as I think certain people cottoned on and said, this is genius what this guy is doing. And look at the business and the brand that he's built for himself now. He gets a Golden Slipper. He could train anything. I don't think it's a point of him not being able to train a two-year-old. He's had plenty of good two-year-olds. But it's just... He's got the Grand Slam. He's done it.
And he sets himself...
He's a freak trainer.
He sets himself these missions that mean a lot. I remember when Preferment won the Derby, he said, what I really want to do now... This is off the back of exactly what you said, of him being the trainer of these imports that come out and flood the Sydney staying races. He said, I'd love to win a Melbourne Cup with an Australasian bred horse to stem the tide. Very elegant.
And did it.
Yeah.
And did it. And you know what? The way he approaches, you know, those targets, whether it's a horse that he's got that he wants to set for a race, or a horse that he identifies that they might try and recruit in from, you know, somewhere else overseas, or New Zealand, or another stable where he's got a contact. You know, he's thinking, always thinking, how am I achieving that next goal? You know, and that's, forget about a horse trainer, that's a successful business person.
Mm.
You know, well, put him into any industry with that mindset, he's having success.
Well, he's a business person. The way he runs his stable, it's a business.
We forget that sometimes, though. And the jockey conversation is relevant to that. The jockeys are self-employed. They are their own employer. They're running individual businesses.
Mm.
Which we forget that sometimes.
How strong is this year's slipper?
See, I don't know, and I don't care that much, because it's not relevant to the big game to me. Like, as far as, are these slipper horses going to go on and become the next Animo?
Well, because in previous years, they haven't gone on.
Well, Shinzo struck me before the slipper as a horse, I think we said on Friday, nice horse, obviously has really good ability, but I sort of thought that size champagne route would be better for him based on the way he was, to my eye, right? And he's gone and won a slipper now. Does that say that Shinzo's better than... And he went off at 16-1, so, or 15-1. So I think a lot of people are probably on the same train. Talented horse, but he's a 1,200-metre slipper scamper, the right race for him. He's won it now. Does that say more about the evenness of the rest of the group? I think the Colts had the better of the
series. I see him as a dime a dozen horses, though. That's why, where do we go with these schnitzels going to stud? There's 300 of them, you know, that's why I...
But they keep producing. The best of them, they're a source of a lot of winners. So I get
it was
what
a train wreck
that,
for learning to fly from start to finish.
Right,
She missed the start, was in an awkward position, and then Chad Schofield got cannoned out of the saddle. Lazago, the stablemate to the winner, was in the same situation. There are a lot of, as there usually are in slippers, a lot of hard luck stories. So the winner clearly went to another level. Cylinder ran up to his best. He was very good. I thought King's Gambit was very good, and Don Corleone was good as well.
Gambit melted behind the barriers.
Yeah, but he ran well.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He had a bit against him because he fell apart.
You say that, and I tend to agree with you to some regard. Like, for me, it was watching Animo, what he could do on the weekend, and three wide, he was just too good again.
Animo, he's really got a lift. He's coming now. Animo lays it down to Converge, and the big A Animo puts the head in front. Rattling Home is Fangirl. Animo's George Ryder. Animo beat Fangirl.
He just fills you with that much confidence. Even if you are in a sticky position, you feel like you're always going to overcome things. No comparison to Winx, but Huey riding Winx four times in this race, sat three deep the whole entire trip, so that gave me a little bit of confidence as well, because he's a very good horse of our sport, and he's a big sexy thing, and he knows it too, and it's we cherish every ride we get on him from now on, because I think counting down there's only a couple left, so looking forward to the next two.
Just love the way J-Max says sexy thing. It was great to watch. He doesn't spread eagle fields, but he just does what he has
tough
to do, Animo. Three wide, without cover. Again, people say, oh, gee, Fangirl was stiff, but she's never going to beat Animo.
No.
Well, when you say it was great to watch, it was bloody hard to watch, really, in the run.
Did you? I never thought he was in doubt.
No. Oh, I did. I thought he had a nightmare assignment.
You want those moments, though, Matty. Yeah. I think you want those moments where it's not inevitable, that you're sitting there thinking, is he going to do it? Is she going to get there?
That was his signature performance outside of everything to me. Like, he even had a great mare from New Zealand. Like,
it was so good.
She ran enormous.
But she got the suck along behind. I was thinking in the run, I actually had something on Levante. I thought, you got to knock off Animo today. He's done it tough, and you've had a suck along, and you are a really good mare, and all the New Zealand form standing up. And the greatness of Animo was that he... And isn't it amazing that when you're on the best horse, you don't worry about cribbing for runs and saving ground. You just let him get into a rhythm. And even in the run, I wonder whether J-Mac was that concerned about where he'd ended up, because he probably thought about the Bowman Winx best horse, just keep it happy and all that. So I think that was the number one performance of his career for mine, Animo. I think that sort of... He's a local champion, but that's where I still don't think that collectively we stack up internationally, and it's going to be interesting to see how he... Put it this way, if Dubai Honor had... If you hadn't known it was a Haggis horse and you watched that win, you'd say that's the best Australian horse since Winx, the way he won. So
you can find the right horse, William Haggis, to bring out.
He's a world-class trainer.
To Australia, can't he?
He's been here enough now. He knows what
but
works.
Maybe he knows he's picking on a weak album, and maybe he knows.
Absolutely he does.
We've been talking about this for a while, though. But yeah, you have a look at what Dubai Honor beat on Saturday, because Animo wasn't in the race, and it's what Animo has been beating up. Like, Montefiore, she's a very good mare, but she's no superstar. Mwunga is not a winning machine these days. Hinge runs honestly, but runs places. Gold Trip, looking for cut out of the ground and further. It wasn't a great randvet.
But they're the weight for age median that we've got. Star Horse. They are the level.
And that's what the level has been for the last 10 or 12 years, minus the Star Horse. Mm. take out Winks, take out Animo, take out Seathy, whoever it was at that time. The rest of them were like that.
These are the Huber Gotchus, aren't they? These are those wait for ages. Yeah. The Prince Salieri's, all those sort of horses.
So when they turn up, they do get a hiding. You know, when a Group 2 horse from Europe comes over who finds his conditions and his distance and he's in good form and good health, that's what they do to them.
But that's why it's such an amazing challenge for Animo now to knock this horse off and then go to Europe. And he has to be even better than he is to be a dominant horse.
So is Europe one run or multiple runs? Because I would hate for him to go there and be judged solely on one run. I think that is unfair.
Would you run him? When's the Lockinge?
Over 1,600 or 2,000.
Lockinge is May? 2 weeks before the...
I reckon the Lockinge is the first cab off the rank. I wonder whether they might go and have a stab at that and then go to Royal Ascot.
I think a stiff mile's ideal for him over there.
Yep.
But I'd love to see two or three appearances, whether it is a chance of that happening or not, I don't know. But I'd hate for this horse to be judged on one run. Just like So You Think went there for a campaign. Just like Starcraft was there. Just like Elstrom was there for a campaign. They're not going to win every time. And therefore, if he turned up and got beaten his first start, and everyone says, oh, well, he's not as good as we thought. That is so unfair.
But can they get a big campaign out of him off the back of a spring that was one run too many, as it turns out, and then a big autumn? Can we expect him to go over there with five runs under his belt?
We just have to be five. Like, yeah. Two, three, you know. But, so, you know, I'm greedy. I love this horse. I love watching him race.
How good's Unicorn Lion, Sharky?
Unicorn Lion?
Japanese horse.
He's got ability, yeah, for sure. If he gets a dry track, he's going to be right in it, isn't
he? So, Animo's the $2.30 favourite in the Queen Elizabeth. Dubai Honor, $2.80. Unicorn Lion, $11. And then you're at the Montefilia, Mr. Brightside, who... I don't like to underestimate a horse like Mr. Brightside, but, you know, he deserves his crack at Animo, doesn't he?
Well, he's a race-fit, tough, hard gelding that'll give a race like that a shake. Like, Unicorn Lions finished 16th in the Japan Cup. It's not exactly screaming form, but he's a group winner and a group one runner-up in Japan previously. So there is a fair benchmark of Japanese form behind Unicorn Lion. Is he the best Japanese horse I've seen out here? No.
There might be a three-year-old that kind of gives some sort of a measure of our next generation, because I thought Lindemann Pericles were really
Lindemann's going to go to the Doncaster.
Tough as. I'd back that. I'd back Lindemann in the Doncaster. And Pericles, that's a classic 2000 back to 600 Chris Waller switch up, you know, with a fit horse that's got the miles and the toughness in his legs, goes on speed. Yeah, Lindemann's a sexy bet in a Doncaster.
If you want to compare the Bankmore crew versus the Lindemann Pericles crew, I think the Lindemann Pericles crew have got a bit more on that form.
Yeah, I agree. I'd agree with that. I thought maybe Pericles, as he ran a strong 2,000, he was home and hosed on Saturday. Hey, got an SMS, got a few SMSs working, thank goodness. Tyler Schiller for mine was the moment of the weekend. His first Group 1 win, great jockey, perfect send-off for Mark Noonan before Hong Kong, which it was. Joseph Pride trained Maria Mia. Tyler Schiller, though, he also won on Opal Ridge, who is the horse that I was disappointed we didn't get to see take on Benedetta in that Inglis race. It would have been a nice contest down the straight. He was Opal Ridge, and the Derby Munro was very good on Saturday as well.
It was a good win, yeah. It was a very good win.
And Uncommon James, so honest, getting beaten in the Galaxy. Asfura not far away as well.
Just no luck, Asfura again.
There was a lot of commentary.
She's busting to win one.
There was a lot of feedback to some comments made by some of the hosts that were really disparaging about the midway and the highway, like the lack of class in those races on this day. And there was a fight back from the country people on social media yesterday. Like,
If the
toffs in town can't accept that midways and highways,
that's what they are,
a part of a 10-race program where there are other highlights. Like, not every race can be full of animos. Like, get a grip, guys. I mean, this is a sort of a wide-ranging sport. I mean, it's great having a midway and a highway where a bush trainer and a bush jockey get a chance.
So do you like having the benchmark 70s on a Saturday feature day like we did at Mooney Valley on Saturday?
Yeah, but if you don't have them, you don't have a race. You just got to...
So why can't we have midways or highways?
Well, we should have midways and highways.
I think we should have them. I would cop, and I detest benchmark 70s and benchmark 78s on a Saturday.
Most horses you run a benchmark 78.
But the punters carry.
Yeah, but that's me.
But what if? But what if that's the category of horses where you're most likely to get a good betting race?
And why can't the lower class owners and some trainers get a shot on a Saturday?
Saturday racing is your premium product. Make it a premium product for your customer. Don't sell them mediocrity. If you're going to, if you want to cater to...
But isn't that what a midway is?
If you want to cater to lesser horses, no, but it's the way it's branded and the way it's put together, it's for certain horses that are in a trained in a certain area or into certain...
But it's still by your definition.
Yeah, but that's lower standard.
Put two of those on.
No, but you're arguing against yourself here. You either don't have any lower standard or you do.
The midway and the highway, I don't mind those concepts. They are completely different to benchmark 70 tripe that we are served up on Saturdays in Victoria.
Hang on. It was a benchmark 70. The midway was a benchmark 70.
But there are restrictions and things around the races. Where the horses come from, like make it a country series. Have a country race on a Saturday that is just for country trained horses. Do that every week. Don't roll up benchmark 70 horses and say, oh, isn't it great? Some owners get a chance to win a Saturday. Saturday racing should be about a premium product, should be aspirational, not just, oh, here's a benchmark 70 on a Saturday because we have 10 races to fill.
Why did we have 10 races?
Well, do you think that this 10 race card on Saturday, ask Michael Brown when he's out here a little later when he tees it up, is this a.
Are we tiptoeing into 10 races?
Yeah. Is this maybe. Bean counters are looking at New South Wales and go, hey, 10 races on a Saturday, they get a lot of turnover, which means you get a lot of income. Could that be the way of the future? Because everyone's going to be looking to monetise their race days as much as possible when there is going to be a dip in turnover. It's already happening and it's inevitable out of the COVID period with the crunch on expendable disposable cash. Could Saturday 10 race cards be the norm in the future?
Well, I wonder. I'm just curious to know why we ran a 10 race card on Saturday. We don't run 10 race cards. We run 9 race cards in this state. So whether this was for some other reason or whether that benchmark 70 race was transferred from somewhere else, I'm just curious as to know whether, as you say, Michael, whether this is a portent for the future, these 10 race cards.
If you're going to have 10 race cards, it has to be half-hour gaps. Has to be. You can't have 40-minute gaps. We will ask,
And he's a bit of a sneaky gun golfer too, Browley.
Mm. He does play a lot. finally, Sharky, you're on the money. Premium racing on premium days. Benchmark 70 on Saturday. Be like the AFL playing GWS Gold Coast on a Friday night. Have a look who's playing footy this Friday night or next Friday night. It's not the greatest game. Shark, the Leviathan owner, forget the little people. Hey, guys, pounding was
Leviathan
huge.
Leviathan owner? My last winner was in a 58.
Yeah, but you've got 50 of them. You've got 50, 58 horses in your stable.
I've only got about 3.
Hey, guys, pounding was huge in the All-Star Mile. Can he step up to be a Group 1 winner? Rick asking the question.
No.
He's flying.
No. Okay. What Group 1 is he winning? What Group 1 is Pounding going to win?
Something in the West.
We have a lot of them in Australia.
Something in the West.
We have a lot of Group 1s.
I will say that.
There's so many Group 1s, but I can't see that.
Hey, boys, Ben Battle would have pushed Animo if they'd
Ben Battle?
Met.
Ben Battle was a bit of an Animo.
Why is Ben Battle consistently referred to as this beacon of international performance because he ran behind Winx?
No, I think
we have seen far better European and international horses come here than Ben Battle.
But what they're saying is the second tier horses that they send here are measure up to our better. I think that's what the tone of that text was.
Right.
Hey, Matty, it's the All Star Mile. I want the stars racing, not benchmark horses who happen to get a lot of votes.
Well, then strip away the whole All Star aspect of it and call it the $5 million mile.
People's Choice Mile.
Congratulations to the Inevitable Connections. They were hoping to finish top 10. Third's fantastic. I bet they're still partying. Well, Matty, you probably would have been partying with them.
How was the lunch, Matty?
Oh, it was amazing. To be honest, it was a spontaneous sort of thing that erupted, and thanks to Andy Lewis for putting on. We had four callers.
Like a cool thing to do.
It was really, really great. And the Inevitable crew, you wouldn't want to get... Yeah, they could probably put one on.
Another one here. I'm a working class owner with a few shares, and it's expensive as it is. Why not put a levy on the corporate bookies who absolutely clean up from the industry Us owners are paying for everything. Easy to say, make the owners pay more, but without owners, the show doesn't happen. And that's in regards to paying for jump outs.
I will say that this on that point. You are the owner of the horse. Therefore, you are responsible for that horse and any bills that are required to go with it. I don't think we can pick and choose in that regard.
By the way, just a little news update on the big one of the big stories of last week with the focus on the Gerald Ryan historical stuff. I did speak to Gerald Ryan this morning, and I just asked him, and he did sound very hollow, I have to say, on the phone, but will you hand in your licence given the pressure points that are being applied at the moment? And his answer was no, absolutely not. So,
and that's off the back of some owners deciding to take their horses out of his stable.
One ownership group,
The reports of the investigation, which is ongoing. A few more SMSs because we weren't able to get to them a little earlier. Good morning, guys. Love the racing program discussion. The safety of jockeys is paramount. What are your thoughts on a cutaway rail in the last 300 metres of the straight? This will give horses trying to find galloping room and avenue to avoid galloping on the heels of other runners. Tactics to stacking
some
horses.
Some do, some
up.
Don't.
Well, there used to be a cutaway, didn't there?
Trots are big on it, for punting, you know, giving every punter a chance. But look, you know, if that's something that can open up a field, one thing that was pointed out to me was you don't seem to get a lot of this at Sandown, you know, the much loved Sandown. So
were you saying the size or tightness of the track is a factor?
Yeah, absolutely it is.
We did have two falls at Flemington,
they race as tight at Flemington as they do anywhere.
Yeah, but it's a big track.
Yeah, but it's got that never-ending home turn, which makes things tight.
If owners don't think they can afford to pay for jump outs, they shouldn't be owning a horse. Mm-hmm. Jockeys put their lives on the line every time they jump out. They need to be compensated. I'm a working-class owner of a few shares. It's expensive as it is. Don't ask the owners to keep paying. So there's a good cross-section of opinions there. Boys, I do want to talk about the Hong Kong Derby because we were watching the Derby yesterday and this was a ride that Jamie Carr, ironically, would have been on Voyage Bubble. It was an outsider and an upset in the Derby.
Purton sends Beauty Eternal up now. Keefe called upon, encountered Voyage Bubble's going a big race. Tuchel looks to get through. Beauty Eternal's taken over from Keefe. Voyage Bubble's going a huge race. Swordpoint can't get through. Beauty Eternal leads. Voyage Bubble. Tuchel's up the rail. Keefe, Voyage Bubble, the classic mile winner from 14. And Tuchel on the rail. Voyage Bubble. Voyage Bubble. What a win in the Derby. Voyage Bubble has won a magnificent Derby finish for Alexi Bedell from Tuchel and Beauty Eternal. He had no right to win that race. Then Straight Aaron, sweet encounter. Next in is Swordpoint
Sharky. A lot of people were asking how did Voyage Bubble win that Derby with the run that it had. And the speed that they went in the early part, there was no right. That horse at about 71 should have been able to hold on and win.
Super tough. And, you know, sort of waiting for Beauty Eternal to explode and be the horse that Zach Purton and others have told us all that he is. And Voyage Bubble just kept punching. It was amazing. Such a great race. Obviously a roughie bowling over the hot fancy there in Beauty Eternal, but I don't think you can take anything away from the performance. But what I have loved from not only watching the Hong Kong races yesterday, but the last month or so of Hong Kong racing, Matty, is the in and out of the jockeys. Bowman, Shin, McDonald, Purton, everyone's they're not, it's not like they're now in one place and if you haven't got a contract over there, well, we don't see them go over and travel. And Jamie Carr, when she was going over there, I love
Damien Lowe
watching how these jockeys.
Luke Curry couldn't even celebrate yesterday. He was on a plane back to Hong Kong
riding it. It's got a Formula One sort of vibe to it.
It does,
for me.
It's very much so.
These jockeys that are making those
where will
trips
they pop
over
up next?
To Hong Kong. I'm just fascinated by it.
And there's
I love
no fatigue when you turn left.
Well, that's it's interesting when you have this discussion about the work hours, lifestyle, continuous racing, yet those at the very, very top of the sport are jumping on planes, riding in one country in one day and another country the next day.
If you can recline that chair, you get a much better
it
flight.
It helps a lot.
Rob Montgomery, the Deputy Chief Steward at Racing Victoria, is going to join you in about 10, 15 minutes to have a chat about, or 20 minutes? 11:15, sorry, whatever time that is, in about 40 minutes' time, Michael, to give the steward's take on the...
Where are you? Are you going to have a hit?
You know what, I went to get... Funny enough, as soon as I get on the golf course, I put my back out. I got up before and I put my back out.
Your back out?
All right, well, you go and get some work done on your back.
Been sitting down for an hour and a half.
Yeah, exactly. It must have been that egg and bacon roll you lifted.
Danny Walker's here, the legendary picnic jockey as well. She's here. She's going to have a chat to us on the big V later.
Why don't you boys have a little break? Sharky, you're done for the day. Great to see you. Maddie, you're coming back on the big V, but it's a race-free Monday, so you can maybe wander back at 11 o'clock when Ollie joins us.
Just got another load of bacon egg rolls over there, Maddie.
Do all these high-tier golf courses have in-house physio? I think they might, actually.
They probably
find myself a physio.
We're going to have a chat to a lot of the guests out here as well who've been putting on this great day. So we'll take a little break. After this, Mark Stevens is going to give us his wrap on round one of the AFL, and we'll have Gators post-mortem as well. Sharknado, you have a good day, good week.
Yes,
Maddie, we'll see you in about 25.
Friday.